Tonight I'd like to read a poem I've read before, but because of the Alice in Wonderland tone of the five aggregates, and especially consciousness, I thought it was very relevant to the subject at hand tonight. It's by Robert Graves. He is quick, thinking in clear images. I am slow, thinking in broken images. He becomes dull, trusting to his clear images. I become sharp, mistrusting my broken images. Trusting his images, he assumes their relevance. Mistrusting my images, I question their relevance. Assuming their relevance, he assumes the fact. Questioning their relevance, I question the fact. When the fact fails him, he questions his senses. When the fact fails me, I approve my senses. He continues quick and dull in his clear images. I continue slow and sharp in my broken images. He, in a new confusion of his understanding, I, in a new understanding of my confusion. So tonight I'm speaking on the last aggregate, consciousness. And I think tonight is a challenging topic, not only for the speaker, but also for the listener. It does have a kind of Alice in Wonderland, through the looking glass distortion. So don't get too upset if you aren't able to follow all of it. I can't even follow all of it. That's why I'm going to stay as close to the text as I can and not ad-lib too much tonight. It's an interesting one. I was watching a PBS series on the origin of life. Maybe some of you have seen that series. And they were looking at how life started on the planet, and from the molten lava flows of 4 billion years ago to the Earth cooling and sufficiently creating an environment that could support life. But then where does life come from? And they've done experience in which they've tried to induce life in the experience, and they've done things like taken the major compounds that form a human being and put it in a beaker, and then put a electrical current through that beaker, and lo and behold, it does form amino acids. Amino acids are the basis compounds for proteins, which of course is the basic compounds for life. However, they're just compounds. They're just molecules, and there's no life there. And so then they hypothesized that the life must have come from somewhere else, because how could it start from inert matter? But then wherever it came from, it had to start from something. And I can only appreciate that form of logic so far before the whole system sort of breaks down, that life is a product of molecular action. And I think we're making a mistake here. The same mistake that we make when we try to stimulate different parts of the brain to see where the center of awareness is, consciousness. And lo and behold, you can stimulate certain aspects of the brain and have the person recoil in fear or happiness or memory, perception, recognition, etc. But they haven't found the seat of consciousness. Now, you see, a materialistic mind looks for life itself to be a product of some functionality of a brain part. rather than, I think, what it really is, which is a fundamental quality of the cosmos, consciousness. I think awareness is fundamental. And that you're not going to find it being generated from a brain part. No, are you going to mix a bunch of molecules together, and no matter how much electricity you put in there, all of a sudden have life. That there's something else here. And I think it's very exciting, because within that different frame of reference comes the heart of spiritual, the heart of spirituality. So what have we been doing in these five aggregates together? And because we're really seeing these groupings of the five aggregates having a particular functionality in terms of the human being. But we don't have life yet in it. We have the preset readiness to repulse or move towards something, which are in the feeling tone. We have the body, but it's a piece of meat, essentially, and water. And we have the preset readiness of the mind to rebel or be attracted, which is the feeling tone. We have the preorganized way of perception, of recognition and memory, which is the neurological response to past history and present situation. And we have the mental formations, or the expression of mind, that constantly color the perceptions and engross the feeling tone so that it begins to proliferate in thought. But what is it? Where's the aliveness in all of that mechanistic quality? Well, it's in consciousness, which is the fifth aggregate. The fifth aggregate. Now, mostly, I think we think of life as sort of out there, and we're in here. We've gone over this a little bit in some of the other aggregates, but I just like to bring in the consciousness equation to all of this. And we think that each one of us are seeing reality in approximately the same way. When we look out from our eyes, that each of us hold reality to be what each of us perceive it to be. That there is a there's a posture of reality that's set and determined. And what we begin to see when we break down these aggregates is that what is really happening is an internal response to something that we can't make real contact with. We feel a rock, a hardness. We feel the warmth of light or heat or fire. And we think that's the way life is. But those are neurological images that the mind has formed internally that we then have a particular feeling in regards to and a particular perception of. It's an internal response. In fact, the human being is essentially a closed system. We cannot make contact with reality. We make contact with the images of reality. It's all neurological. The brain organizes the different neurological responses to form an image, which we call dream or memory or perception or feeling or thought. Those are the responses, the imaginary formations around the different sense, neurological sense data that is organized within the brain. And we look out from the brain and claim that that organizational principle is preset and determined by each person. But in fact, it's as varied as the brains are on the earth. Now, when you begin to see that we're a closed system, that we cannot make contact with reality, this changes some things. We have to really see that. We have to experience that fact meditatively. And somebody might say, so what? That doesn't change anything. I still have to pay my bills. Hmm. Well, the problem arises when we take this inward experience as the objective fact of reality. Because when we make that assumption, then we no longer hold the boundary from whence it came. It flows out. Reality is doing it to us. And therefore, we have to respond to react to reality for doing it to us, when actually we're doing it to ourselves. When the Buddha said, the whole of the world is created in this fathom-long body, this is an intimation of what he was talking about, I think. That from the images that we're creating and the reaction to those images, which are also an eternal response of those images, and the feeling tones and the thoughts and the proliferation of thoughts around that, we then engage in life as if the problem were external and we have to fix it. When we can bring self-awareness and begin to see that it's an internal closed system. Now, it's not that there isn't a reality out there. I mean, you can't walk through walls. Something stops you. It's just that we, when we look through the mind, have misrepresented what is out there. And in terms of what our history and knowledge presets us to perceive. And of course, when we misperceive it as an external reality, then all of the reactions that we have internally are projected externally as well. And that's why one of the maxims of meditation is that it's never about the other. It's never about what's external. Now, when we talk about the fifth aggregate of consciousness, when jnana is the Pali for consciousness, the suttas talk about two different definitions of what consciousness is, and I will try to bring them together tonight with two or three different analogies. And I was thinking, well, I should just hold to one analogy, but I think each one of them have a slightly different perception and maybe increase our opportunity for understanding the nature of consciousness, because it's hard to get a sense of this. The first is that consciousness is defined in the suttas as the knowing faculty of mind, that which receives and holds the impressions from the six senses, the knowing quality of mind. Now, when we talk about the knowing quality of mind, we're not talking about the cognitive quality of mind, the intellectual knowing. We're talking about the immediate knowing of cognizing that an event has occurred. For instance, you hear a sound. There's the knowing of the hearing. And then there's the thought that it's a bird. And there's the knowing of the thought. Consciousness is the ability to know that sound is arising or that the thought is occurring. Now, I want to give my first analogy, because the second definition of consciousness, which is one that I'm much more comfortable with than that one, is that it's a capacity to have subjective experience. Consciousness is the capacity for subjective experience. So let's look at how these two definitions come together. Suppose I was out in space, and this is actually Guy Armstrong's analogy that I heard and liked very much. And suppose I was floating out in space with my back turned away from the sun. Now, if you look out in space with your back away from the sun, you can't see light. You can't see the sunlight. Everything looks black when you look out. And your assumption is that everything is black until an object crosses your viewpoint. and picks up the reflective quality of the sun. Then that holds the light, which has always been there, you just haven't perceived it, and reflects it back from the image that it reflects back from as it moves in front of our eyes. So too, consciousness is the reflective quality back from its content. It reflects back the fact of thoughts, dreams, emotions, feelings, perceptions. Now, a consciousness that is not filled with a lot of content, is not filled with a lot of attachment and fear, is basically pure awareness, much as the sun's light is pure awareness. And we only know that things exist when an object passes in front of our eyes, reflecting that awareness back so that we can see things, hear things, know things, feel things, sense things. Now, if you have a whole number of different objects passing in front of your view very quickly, which is what the six sense doors do, you have what you call a tapestry of events occurring, which convince you that it's all solid and all happening together simultaneously in one single event called life. The Buddha said, each of the six sense doors have their own consciousness. Visual consciousness arises when the organ of the eye meets a visual object with attention. And then there is awareness, just as the eyesight, just as the sun notices an object, a bird that flies in front of it. Now, I like that a lot because it's why we're so convinced that everything is all together in one lump sum. And it also verifies the fact that we have a capacity for subjective experience. Let me give you another metaphor, another analogy. This one of a movie projector. Now, a movie projector shows images that are all composed of different shades of light. We look at the images and we don't see the light. We don't see the light. We see the images and are convinced that the images are real because they tell a story, the perceptual story of those images. When actually their composite is nothing but light. So too, our consciousness has a set of images of their feelings, of perceptions, of the dreams, of the memories, all composed of light, of awareness. But we miss the light. We just see the different patterns of images around us. And since our tendency is to go after that which we can separate out, we separate the images out from the light. Never mind, the light is the basis for all the images. In fact, it's composed of all the images. But we miss the composition for the sense of wanting or fearing those images. We move in relationship to them. So we're after the ingredients of the projected film. But there is no ingredients to the projected film. It's all light. Try to go up in a movie and drink the beer. Right? That's formed internally. That is our mark upon reality. The mark isn't there except through the images of consciousness that we place upon and form life to be. So I hope these metaphors are working for you a little bit. I, again, want to go slowly into this topic. It contains such richness in terms of both where the problem lies and what the problem is, but also in the right way to discern and work with the meditation, which I'll get to in just a minute. Now, it's always interesting to me that in this mechanical approach that so many scientists believe in the mind, that they think that if they just wired it in the right way, that a robot would, they could essentially build a robot from, if they just wired it in the right way, from the ingredients and the elements around us. So why is it that there's an inward experience at all? Why isn't it all black inside if it's so easy to reproduce? I'm sure a mechanical robot on a automobile assembly line doesn't have an inward capacity for self-examination at all. You see, this capacity of consciousness is very fundamental to the sense of our aliveness. We all know we're conscious. We all know that we have that capacity for an inward experience. We just aren't understanding how it holds and forms the world around itself. And one of the things it forms around, of course, in its display of memory, in its display of history and recognition, is the story of me. Within our consciousness plays out the historical story about myself and all of the woes and troubles and burdens that story contains. All within the field of consciousness, all the reflective qualities of light that we just lace together in terms of time. No longer, there are random images, but the mind has the ability to lace it in terms of continuity of me. That continuity of me feels very solid. It feels very secure. It feels very assured of its place and its history and where we've come from. In fact, we can diagram our life since birth. But is it that way? Is that the truth? When we look at our experience, in fact, we can, at very high degrees of samadhi or concentration states, you can begin to see chunks of your consciousness rising and falling as the objects move in front of the sun. That it isn't all a continuous, seamless series of events. And you can actually see that occurring, and it can become very fearful as almost a sense that you're being decimated, that you're on an earthquake and everything is breaking apart. And that's one of the reasons we don't, many of us don't have a tendency to move at that level of discrimination. Now, meditation, let's define consciousness very simply as being conscious of. Then mindfulness is a mental formation that energizes consciousness. And if consciousness is being conscious of, then consciousness is the subject and reveals the objects that are in front of it. So what is the meditation, the purpose of the meditation? The purpose of the meditation is to energize consciousness sufficiently so that it starts noticing that which plays forth within consciousness, all of the dreams, the images, all of that, and begin to understand that their composite, what they consist of, is not trustworthy. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that when we start moving our energized awareness, which is mindfulness, consciousness, and start looking at the display of the other aspects of the content of consciousness in front of us, because they're all formed of images, they can't last very long. They aren't solid. They aren't permanent. They aren't lasting. They're just neurological displays. And therefore, you begin to notice that everything in this tradition points towards impermanence. Nothing solid, nothing substantial, nothing holding up. Everywhere we touch, feel, look, sense, it's all raining down. It's all falling apart. Why? Because the mind can't hold that particular display for very long. And it isn't substantial. When you move into these images, when you move into what the actual experience is, you see a very insubstantial quality to it. Nothing really solid, nothing permanent. And so from that energized consciousness, which is mindfulness or awareness, we begin to release our hold on the images the mind has created. Releasing the hold. No longer making our life around the particular images that the projector has displayed on the screen. We're no longer chasing or avoiding the different images, the different scenes on the movie. Because it's not worth it. They don't last. They're not substantial. They're not worth depending upon. They're not worth trusting. And so, through our inward attention towards the displays of consciousness, we begin to invest less and less energy in concrete, and making these images concrete and substantial, and our life dependent upon them. In other words, meaningful to us. So we withdraw the psychic energy from that investment. When that happens, what we begin to notice is the light that has formed the images. Is awareness that has formed the consciousness. The awareness itself. When we're no longer invested in the images creating the happiness for our life, we release the world to be what it is, which is the display of mental images. And when we do that, what we fall back to, what we recline in, what we relax with, is the light that has been the display and in fact has been the essence of the images itself. Then we begin to notice something that is truly trustworthy. Which are no longer, it's no longer an image any longer. In fact, it can only be intimated. It cannot be known. It cannot be experienced. Because experience is just the displays of the mind. The images of the mind. There's something else. Some resonance deep inside of us. For the sense of me and the sense of insight is just more of the display of images. So we take a seat in no location, inside, outside, anywhere. In the sense of I, in the story of me, nowhere. There's no residing in any of the images any longer, for we've seen that they're untrustworthy. Now we can release those images. In fact, what releases itself from those images is light itself, because it's been the projector the whole time that has been searching for its origin. And we see that any wanting or fearing takes us far encases us within those images, because it's the wanting and fearing of those images. So we release ourselves from the wanting and fearing. And we also see that no matter what images arise, those aren't me. Those aren't me. The sense of I, the image of my story, those aren't me. Those are just the displays, the dances of the different photographic film of light. All composed of light. Remember this, because I'm going to bring it all the way around. The images are composed of light, but at first we have to release, negate the images, because we have thought of them not as light, but as truth. So we negate the truth of the images, not the image itself. I told you this was way out there. But I want you to go way out there. And if you don't get anything, you can get a sense, perhaps, of wonder, of mystery about what this mind and body is about. To reach Dharma, a good Dharma talk will have you reach. You have to come up out of yourself. Reach up. Not just expect it to, you know, okay, now I've got to go back to work tomorrow morning. It's got to... Let me read what the Upanishads, these ancient Indian texts, have to say about this. Not that which the eye sees, but that whereby the eye can see. Know that alone as the absolute truth, the eternal, and not what people here adore. Not that which the ear hears, but that whereby the ear can hear. Know that as the absolute truth, the eternal, and not what people here adore. And on he goes through each of the senses. Awareness itself. Awareness itself is what it's pointing to. Not that which the eye sees, but the fact that the eye can see. That which makes it possible for sight to occur. Not that which I so want. Not the image. My zafu. But that which knows. That which allows knowing to occur. You see, that's the life. That's where the life is. The life isn't in the knowing. The life isn't in the sound doing a mechanical thing to the ear. It's in that which knows that sound is arising, that allows sound to arise. Therein is the aliveness. And we keep losing it in the distinction of the image that we have portrayed. This is a lamp by my mind's eye, and probably by your mind's eye, but not in fact. We chase after the image the mind has portrayed. And there's a functional utility to doing that, of course, because you need these things to light up your house. But to hold it to be just that is to die and be dependent upon just that. And when it goes, a part of you goes. But that which, where the aliveness, where the mechanical approach to finding the human being within the mind's door can never access the center of awareness, it'll never find it because it's universal. It's everywhere. It's fundamental to the cosmos. Why can't I get these amino acids to become a human being? It's because that is... Who's asking that question? That's where it is. Not outside manufactured in some chemistry set. The person who is seeking is the answer. Not what the person is seeking. Do you see that? So nothing is you. Now, listen, just get a feeling for this tone. It would be wonderful if we would all light up at this, but just get a feeling for this. So nothing, none of the images are you. None of the images of you are you. None of the concepts about you are you. They are just mental images played upon consciousness. Now, at the same time, those images are you because they contain and are composed of light itself. It's just we've been looking at it wrong. When things mean something other than light, awareness, we're looking at it wrong. We're looking at it not seeing it as an image. And then the world, when we back away, when there is the release of the world from the conviction of our knowing, then everything becomes you because the images are seen for what they are. And that's why, as Nisargadatta Maharaj says, wisdom tells me I am nothing. The heart tells me I am everything. See how beautiful that is? Krishnamurti once said, do you want to know my secret? And the audience turned and said, yes, we want to know your secret. He said, I don't mind what's happening. I don't mind what happens. I don't mind what happens. Is that all they said? Because not minding what happens is the release of the form, of the tragedies, of the experiences, of the events, of the cataclysmic circumstances of our life. All of that are just the images, the displays upon the screen, the different storylines, all formed with images. But there is caring about what happens. Because that's the compassionate response of life loving itself. So you live with that paradox. And that's where all these paradoxes of Zen, etc., come from. And what is the mechanism? Is release. Releasing the relationship, the wanting, the fearing, which creates the images into substantial entities. That surrender does not take time. Know it and release. And the mechanism for doing that is to bring awareness, you see? You bring the thing itself to the object that doesn't seem to hold awareness. And with awareness, sees something and doesn't do anything with it, which means fear it or want it, then the awareness changes the thing into itself. It becomes that which it perceives when it's not feared or wanted or desired, changes back into itself. Awareness seeing itself. And you'll have moments in which an emotion that has been so tragically and historically your burden, when not moved, when not feared, suddenly opens up. And you know that it's composite. It's composed of awareness itself. Because all things are conscious. Vijnana. Consciousness. It's fundamental to all things. And so the homework tries to point you to that. Sitting back, perhaps now is a good opportunity to practice that. Just sitting, letting the mind be relaxed without tension. And what you see are two things. You see the objects that are appearing within consciousness, and the alert presence that holds the object. You can feel both of those things. When we're not too invested in the object, you can get a sense of the field that holds the object. One is awareness of consciousness, which is the objects. The other is awareness of awareness. Life seeing itself. God, if you will, seeing itself. And you begin to understand that all this is a play. That God had no other way to make contact with himself except through the mechanism of this. Whoa. Each of us are the holders of that flame. And each of us have the unique perspective of that flame. The Buddha was once asked, said, what's the locus of the senses? Where do all the senses, what's the locus of all? Buddha said, the mind. And then he was asked, well, what's the locus of the mind? What holds all the mind? And the Buddha said, awareness. And then he was asked, what's the locus of awareness? And he said, nirvana, freedom. Because awareness is not held, cannot be contained, cannot be confined, has no seer outside of it. It is seeing itself. This then is the five aggregates. Thank you. If we can just sit for a minute or two.